As always, even though the music says, for now, two guys gaming, this is one guy reading. Whether you meant to or not, you found Noob's Book Club. Hello and welcome, I'm Sean, noob of all trades from Two Generations Gaming, for now, soon to be slucas.me, and in this particular series, I am reading and reacting to Legends and Lattes, the novel by Travis Baltry. We only have two episodes left. And in this one, we get some action in our cozy fiction that sets us up for a pretty exciting conclusion, I must say. I wasn't expecting that after the way things were going. I thought that it just might kind of end up finishing the way it started and not really having much conflict. But I guess you have to have a conflict in a story, and this is where the major one popped up. As I did last time, that seemed to work pretty well for me. I will just give a quick synopsis of each chapter. We are doing chapters 19 through 24 in this episode. So I will give a synopsis of each of those chapters. Quick one, just a sentence or two. And then we will move on to my reaction. If you want a better summary, go to supersummary.com. They don't sponsor me or anything. It's just I really like what they do. I'm not against being sponsored. I just doubt that they actually do. But you can check it out and make the choice for yourself. All right, I think that's enough intro. Without further ado, let's get into the quick summary. Chapter 19, Viv finally tells Tandre about the stone. She also mentions that the Madrigal's payments are in cinnamon rolls, which is a nice little, I guess, okie doke from last time. Last time I thought that Viv might have to work for her as a thug, but he didn't go that way. Instead, he just went with the slightly humorous and softer cinnamon rolls. They invent iced coffee, and Viv uses that as a conversation starter to get Hemington to build her a ward to help keep Fennis out. Chapter 20 brings us the picnic scene. Tandre opens up about fleeing her succubus nature and past. They walk home. Tandre invites Viv in. There's an awkward bit of silence at the end there. Tandre almost says something, but then they part. Chapter 21 brings another confection from our friend, the Rakin, whose name is escaping me. I just can't think of it. Sorry. It'll come to me while I'm talking. But anyway, he creates chocolate croissants. They call him chocolate-filled crescents, or sweet crescents, or midnight crescents. That's what they call them. They also have an idea for personal mugs that they can use for to-go drinks. Viv starts to feel a warmth, kind of a love towards Tandre, but she can't find the words of what she's actually trying to say. Chapter 22, Fennis triggers the ward. Viv confronts him. Amity scares him off. Fennis accuses her of hiding the stone's value from the party. We'll come back to that later. Chapter 23, Tandre explains arcane reciprocity. It's kind of a magical backlash. The magical warns Viv. Tandre stays over. They share a bed with their backs to each other. So things are getting a little more serious. Chapter 24. The shop burns with a corpse fire. Viv rescues Tandre, then the lockbox, and finally the coffee machine. She notices that the flagstone has been disturbed. Is it gone? They touch foreheads. The main takeaway is that at least they didn't lose everything, which I think is a nice thing to take away from something like this happening. They lost a lot, but they haven't lost everything. So we'll start with Fennis. I said we would talk about him more. One of the main things that makes him work is that he's not a cartoon villain. His accusation actually has a grain of truth. I mean, Viv did take the stone without telling the party of any possible value. She comes back with the fact that the party agreed to split the loot and the hoard was massive. Fennis is motivated by greed. He's not motivated by justice. He doesn't actually care that she lied necessarily about the stone or kept the truth. He just wants the stone for himself and That's what brought him back in all of this. He's resentful towards her, and his greed motivated him to come back. He also shows himself to be a coward by sneaking in during the night and then burning the shop while they were still in it. He definitely could have handled that differently, but I guess he wanted to ensure that they wouldn't make it. It's kind of dark, but I mean, they ended up making it. Did he want to burn them alive in the shop? That's kind of twisted, but I mean, I guess I can see it coming from him. Does it make Viv morally gray to take the stone without disclosure? I mean, I don't think so. Like, she seems like the kind of person who, even if she did it for good because she wanted to take the stone and she wanted to make a new life for herself. So, even if it's somewhat ambiguous whether she could have told them about the stone and the possible value of the stone, I don't think that it taints her character all that much, honestly. I think that also because she didn't know that the stone was going to be what the stone ended up being, it's lore, it's mythical that the stone does what it does. And as I've discussed several times in the past, I don't think the stone actually helped her necessarily, or if it did, it only helped her by pushing her towards people that could help her and that she could help out. Ultimately, Finis represents that old life that Viv is trying to leave. He can't stand that she's found peace, and he's not able to because he's such a rotten piece of shit, to put it bluntly. Now, teasing out that Scalbert Stone, is it a luck? Is it a crutch? Will she actually be better off without the stone? Who knows? I mean, throughout the book, Viv thanks the stone when things goes well. She does panic when Hemington's ward might detect it, and she hides it like a secret shame because she feels bad for taking it. I think she mentions that at some point in the book, that she felt bad for taking it and not telling the others about it. But also, maybe she thinks that the magic will disappear if people know about the stone, or maybe they won't think that she's as good as she wants them to think. I guess there's some interesting discussions coming from this stone. I never thought that it would have this much of an impact on me. I just kept talking about it like it was something in the background and wasn't really doing much, but I guess it's part of the moral center of who Viv is and who she's becoming. Interesting. Tandri warns, after she knows about the stone, that removing the stone could cause a backlash. The fire happens right after Finis disturbs the flagstone. Is it coincidence? Is it magic? Or just Finis trying to cover his tracks, keep them occupied while he runs off with the stone? I think that it's just Finis being an asshole and trying to cover his tracks because he wanted the stone so badly and he just could not figure out a way to ask Viv for it, or maybe, I don't know, make a deal with her in some form or fashion. Not that I know that he could, but who knows. He just gets overcome by the fact that he did not get the stone and he felt for some reason that he deserved it. She, at the end, notices that the flagstone has been disturbed, but she doesn't go back and dig for the stone. She saves the lockboxes and the coffee. She helps Tandri escape. Those are the things that are important to her. The stone might be gone, but as she says at the end, they didn't lose everything. She still has what she built, and she has all the people around her to help to rebuild if that's what she wants to do. So I mentioned that the fire seems a little out of place in a book like this. We've been calling it cozy fantasy, I guess that's the name of the genre. And it was quite a shock to have something so sort of brutal and violent happen in a book like this that was built on people becoming friends and Viv building this thing, and then you have this come out of nowhere. It was a bit shocking to me, but the fire is a magical fire that cannot be put out with water, so it works in the fantasy realm. It's not somebody setting fire to the thing using like a match or what have you. Viv doesn't actually have to fight anyone in this case. She just has to rescue the things and the person that is most important to her, and also make sure that Amity makes it out. The violence happens off page. We witness the after effects of it, but we don't actually see Fenris set the fire, and the aftermath is emotional. It's not like a gory thing. It's Viv and Tandri realizing that they still have each other and they still have the things that are important to them. They haven't lost everything. This is shown in what Viv saves and in what order. She saves Tandri, first priority, the person that you care about, the person that's your partner, Amity, who's become a part of the coffee shop and their little family. The lockbox has the money in it, has the deed, obviously those are things that she needs. And then the coffee machine, which is important and potentially expensive to replace. So what does she lose? I mean, she lost the building. She most likely lost the stone. She can, if she wants to, always rebuild. And she has all of these people who are willing to help her, and probably even more so now that this has escalated to such a point that somebody would rather burn the shop and steal the stone than see her succeed. That's sure to bring out the good in everybody who wants to help her. The big key line to take away from it is, at least we didn't lose everything. They still have each other, and they still have the knowledge that they did something great together, and they can probably do it together again if they want to. Speaking of doing it, this is kind of an awkward segue, but we will touch on the romance this time. I know I said that I didn't want a kissing book, and so far they haven't kissed. Maybe they have, and they just haven't talked about it, but they are definitely getting closer, and there is a romance part of it, so my wife was right. There is a romance aspect to this book, but it is not what I would call a romance book. They have a picnic, which I thought was a really cute, really touching scene. They share a brandy. Tandri invites Viv back to her house. They almost say something to one another. Maybe I love you, I care about you, I'm getting really close to you, and maybe we should take this to the next level type thing, but they don't actually say anything. And then later on, Tandri insists on staying over. They share a bed, backs to each other, no physical intimacy described. But Viv is glad that Tandri stayed because she had somebody there with her, and the nights were getting lonely, she admitted. Also, Viv notices that every once in a while she gets this funny feeling around Tandri. And it could be because of the succubus life, but it's most likely just because they are close to each other and becoming more intimate because of that closeness. And finally, after the fire, they hold hands and touch foreheads. That is a truly touching and intimate scene. I'm glad that he included it in the book because it really drives home that this is the emotional climax of the book. Their relationship has grown from strangers to employer-employee to partners in the coffee shop to something deeper. The book doesn't have a kiss. It's not a kissing book, or there's no confession. They don't say the thing that they want to say or that they think maybe they should say. How does he say it? They almost say something but don't ultimately. So it's not that they don't want to say it, it's just that they can't say it right now. It's more just about two people who have saved each other in different ways. Tandri gave Viv a reason to invest in her life outside of the shop, which is something that she said that Viv should do. Viv gave Tandri a place where she isn't judged by her race as a succubus. When the guy comes in and starts giving her shit about it, Viv tells him to fuck off, basically. And that deepens the relationship between the two of them. The forehead touch that I've been talking about after the fire is them saying, we're still here, and that's enough. We have each other, and right now that's enough. Again, it's a romance book. My wife was right. But the romance is not the key part of the book. It's just something that has happened between two people who got closer over time. That's a pretty cool way to write a romance book, I think. And if more of the books are like this, I might read more of these types of books, romance or not. It's just two people who are loving each other and enjoying each other's company. And that is fine in the context of everything that has happened. It's just a nice, beautiful, positive story in the face of all the bullshit and negative that we've had to deal with on a daily basis over the last however many years. Decade, at least. I mean, there's been some ups, I guess, in that, but most of it has been down, 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 and I hope we reach rock bottom soon and end up coming out of the other side better for it, because otherwise, what the hell are we doing here? Right, let's close this out with a few final themes and get ready for the thrilling conclusion of Legends and Lattes. So the big one is the value of the right company. I've been talking about this one throughout, that she found people to help her, Cal and Tandri, and then even beyond that now, they have Hemington's ward who helps her to fight against Fennis somewhat, at least until he burns the place down. Amity steps up to protect them. The magical gives her a warning. Tandri is there, as I said. Even if Cal comes and goes, Tandri is a constant presence in her life. Viv didn't have to go at it alone. She's got a party around her, just like she did during her adventuring days, but this party is more constructive than destructive. Choosing to change one's path, this is obvious in Viv's case, where she's going from, like I said, being an adventurer, where she cut things down, to being somebody who can build something up. However, Tandri is also fleeing her succubus label and becoming something on top of that. She still has the succubus inside of her, obviously, and it comes out sometimes when she tries the chocolate, I think it is. She gets kind of squirrely, and she and Viv obviously are having an effect on one another. Appearances and misconceptions. So things seem to be going well. Like I said, that's what made the fire so shocking, and it's the ultimate sort of part of this theme, where Viv shows that she's changed. Tandri has also changed, and they can't be judged based on who they are. I mean, the book starts with that, and now we've gotten to a point where nobody is even judging Viv or Tandri, or very few people are judging them based on how they look or based on what they might have done in the past. So you can change who you are, and appearances can be deceiving. Don't judge a book by its cover is what they always say, right? Thimble. Thimble made the croissants. Jeez. I forgot his name. Sorry. There you go. Thimble. He's the baker. Thimble. Okay. Anyway. So the shop is gone. The stone might also be gone, but Viv still has Tandri, Amity, the coffee machine, and the lockbox. And we will find out in the next episode whether that is enough to start over, or if Fennis is going to be back to try to destroy that life as well. Although I think he's done, because if he got the stone, then I don't think he really has a reason to come back and bother Viv anymore. As always, thanks for listening. You can find me for now at www.twoguysgaming.net, only for a week. next week I will be at slucas.me if I can get everything up and running, but it'll be sometime in June that I will definitely be at slucas.me. We have articles. I just did an article on my history with Mortal Kombat, just some quick little blurbs about each game and how I grew through the series. Also did a review of the new Mortal Kombat game, and I did like a little hype party that you could throw before going to the movie. We also have a YouTube, NoobDad131. I just put up the fourth episode of the Tomb of Horrors. Only one more of those to go, and I will be done with that series, and then I can move on to Joust and other things. Also have a TikTok, NoobDad76, where I am semi-active, and every now and then I go partially viral, where I get thousands of views and hundreds of likes on particular posts. I will be back with this series in about a week to wrap it up, and then next month is Contact by Carl Sagan. I will talk to you then. Be good. Stay safe. Have fun. Bye, guys.
We are Two Guys Gaming.